Michael, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
All right. You got a nice cup of coffee there with you?
I do, in fact.
All right. Sounds great. For folks who don't know, tell them what the Mackinac Center for Public Policy does.
Sure, absolutely. We do public policy research, and we approach everything from a free market perspective, and we suggest solutions for social problems and public policy issues that we have in this state from a free market perspective.
Now, a friend of mine and I surround myself with people who are the complete opposite of me, and I guess it keeps me grounded, but a friend of mine believes that the Mackinac Center is very conservative in nature. Do you believe that?
Well, conservative is the wrong word to use, because we don't deal with social issues in any way. We mainly focus with economic issues, and from that perspective, we approach things from a free market perspective. And so a blanket label of conservative really doesn't fit us very well.
Isn't it funny how you can be labeled conservative when you talk about and when you discuss fiscal responsibility?
Yeah, it is, and it's, you know, one of those labels that we don't like to use, because it really doesn't do a good job of describing exactly what we do. We don't approach things from a conservative perspective. We approach things from a free market perspective, which some people who call themselves conservatives agree with, and some who call themselves conservatives don't agree with. So we don't really fit within that label.
Michael, who does most of your work and research in dealing with issues like Pure Michigan?
Well, we have different analysts here that handle those different issues. We have fiscal policy analysts, we have labor policy analysts, property rights and environmental analysts, and then what I do is education policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about education policy. I'm privileged enough to get your mailings called Viewpoint on Public Issues, and you wrote several that really got my interest. These are dealing with education, and one is common school funding myths, and kind of blew my mind on some of the myths.
Yeah, and there's I wrote a series of these common school funding myths, seven in total, that we're going to put together in a publication. But Michigan school funding is extremely complex. And because it's complex, because you have revenues coming in from local sources, from state sources, and from federal sources, and some of them are mixed, and the schools spend them in different ways, it's difficult for people to understand exactly how much money schools are getting and how much they're spending and what they're spending it on. And so the goal of looking at this through this publication or this process was to look at what are some of the most common misconceptions about school funding in our state, and what is actually what does the data show about those misconceptions.
Michael, one of the things, and you don't discuss it in some of the common school funding myths that I have in front of me, but one of the issues I always wonder about is early childhood development. We've talked with education experts, we've talked with politicians. There's information and data out there that 0 to 5 is critical. Especially when it comes to developing folks to get ready for school, and we constantly disassociate ourselves from spending enough money on that. What's your take on that?
Well, with regards to early childhood development, I'm not exactly aware of all of the research on brain development of children. I've heard, like you have, that it's relatively widely accepted that that's an important part of a child's life in terms of development. But when you're talking about early childhood programs and things like preschool and other programs that we offer, Great Start and Head Start and things like that, the research is actually mixed on how effective those programs are. For instance, last year, the Federal Department of Health and Human Services did the broadest, most in-depth study of Head Start that has ever been done. And what they discovered is that after 1 year of Head Start, they could recognize in kids 112 different advantages that they had over children who were not participating in Head Start. That sounds really good. The problem is that the study also showed that by the end of first grade, all of those advantages had disappeared. And the students were no different, statistically speaking, than any of the students who did not participate in Head Start. What you often hear repeated again and again is data based on a couple of programs that were extremely expensive, extremely intensive, and you often hear that those are, you know, were very successful in producing students who later on had a higher graduation rate, more likely to get a job, had higher lifetime earnings and things like that. And that's all, you know, the research there is very sound, except the problem is that those were very limited experiments. And they were very expensive and very intensive programs, and they were very different from things like what we normally talk about, which is Great Start and Head Start and those kind of more common programs.
We're talking with Michael Van Beek from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy on the Tony Connolly Morning Show on 1320 WILS. And as you write, Michael, with Michigan's economy in decline and families departing the state in increasing numbers, tax revenues that pay for our public schools are also falling because employee compensation costs consume around 80% of most school districts' operating budgets and also include unsustainable retirement benefit provisions. The legislature has been considering proposals to reduce these expenses, we're seeing with Social Security. But the MEA is fighting this.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the ironic things that's going on right now is the fact that the MEA has a lawsuit against the legislation that was passed earlier this year that required their school employees to contribute 3% more into their own pension program. And because of that lawsuit, the school districts now are going to be on the hook for that 3%. And effectively what it means is that schools will not have $188 per pupil to spend on programs and other academic things within the district because of this MEA lawsuit.
Are teachers getting picked on because of the benefits they have in the retirement packages?
Well, one of the things to understand about about teachers and about our public school system is that it is the largest line item on our state budget. So when we talk about the fact that our budget is in deficit and that we're having troubles making ends meet, and that, you know, we have lower revenue in this state because people are choosing to go where there are greener pastures, it makes sense that we look at what we're spending in our public schools. And, as you mentioned, the majority of what we spend is on employee compensation. So that is the single most largest expense that we have as a state. So if we're going to try to right the ship, it only makes sense that we look at some of those factors. And so it's not necessarily that people are picking on teachers or school employees. As the MEA says, you know, they say that they get treated like punching bags by politicians and that politicians actually enjoy it. I doubt that. But it's just the fact of the matter that they are the largest group of the largest expense to our state.
And finally, Michigan State University claimed through a study that taxpayers would save $612 million by consolidating Michigan's 551 school districts into 83 single county districts. You don't agree with that?
No, absolutely not. The reason I don't agree with that is that because the research that was done on this was incredibly shoddy. Essentially, what the study did was take data from 12 school district consolidations in rural New York from 1985 till 1997 and applied that across our entire state to every single district, every single dollar that we spend on schools, and said this is how much money we would save then if we consolidated in this way. The paper does nothing to explain why the data from rural New York from 20 years ago is even relevant to Michigan. And in fact, I went and talked to the author of the original study upon which this one was based, and he said the same thing. He called it not an appropriate use of scientific evidence. He called it extremely naive, and that he also said blanket attempts to consolidate just don't make any sense. So it was a great headline getter, but in fact, the state is very unlikely to save that amount of money from consolidating districts. More likely, what we would say by consolidating districts is only in very small districts, and the statewide benefit would be relatively small, probably in the maybe tens of millions of dollars, which for a $20 billion school system isn't really a whole lot.
And Michael, what are you working on now?
Well, a lot of different things. Looking at some of the differences between funding and expenses that happen between suburban, rural, and urban districts. I've been looking a lot at virtual learning and how that might be able to save, allow districts to offer more courses and more high-quality courses at a lower cost. And so we're always working on new stuff.
And if folks want to read these and other reports, they can go to www.mackinaw.org.
Mackinaw with a C. You got it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael.
Thanks a lot, Tony.